From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made the last time you left your home and walked into a building, any building, maybe for a meeting, maybe to buy a cup of coffee, maybe to apply for a job. Think about this. How is that building powered? For a long time, that answer has revolved around fossil fuels of some kind. But yesterday, a group of local partners launched something different, a kind of climate initiative aimed at promoting carbon-free electricity to power our region's buildings and vehicles. They're calling it AMPT. And as I thought about this program, I thought about the building I'm sitting in now. And I thought, how are we powered? And then I thought, I really have no idea. I mean, I could probably come up with some answers, but there's so much that we're learning about how we power our world, especially our transportation and the buildings that we spend most of our time in. And making a change is difficult, but this is within reach now, according to the partners behind this initiative. What kind of energy sources are we talking about that are not fossil fuels? Who can be involved? And what really is realistic? Let's explore all of that as we talk about AMPT with our guests. In studio with us is the Chief of Staff of the Greater Rochester Chamber of Commerce. That's Mark Cohen. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Dave Benetti is here, Chief Marketing Officer for SWBR. Dave, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Evan. Good to see you.
On the line with us is Abby McHugh Griffa, Executive Director for the Climate Solutions Accelerator for the Genesee Finger Lakes region. Abby, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Evan. Glad to be here.
And Mike Waller, Director of Sustainability and Special Assistant to the CEO for Rochester Regional Health. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being here.
Yep. Glad to be here. Thanks.
Abby, how do I figure out what's powering this building? Why didn't I know?
Well, unfortunately, a lot of people don't know, which is exactly why we have launched this campaign. Although, you know, it is likely. You know, the majority of buildings in our region are probably burning natural gas, perhaps some other fossil fuel, for heat. And that is not a climate-friendly option at all. So that's the problem we need to address.
Okay. And so this is, there's a lot of different layers to this. It's timeline, it's scale of solutions, it's who's responsible for pushing this forward, whether it's individuals, whether it's CEOs, the Chamber of Commerce, government, et cetera. We'll talk about all of that as we go throughout this hour. But Abby, can you give me a sense for how this came together in the first place?
Yes, absolutely. So it was back in the middle of 2019. We approached CauseWave Community Partners with the idea of bringing together representatives from prominent local institutions to collaboratively develop a campaign. At the time, we were calling it Go All Electric, and that is still kind of a mantra of ours, but to promote this idea of beneficial electrification and even, you know, make people aware that beneficial electrification is something we should be striving for and what that is and how it is achieved. And that was the beginning in 2019, obviously. You know, getting from there to where we are now did take considerable time, but I think, you know, kind of the amount of brain power and you know, collective expertise that went into it, I feel really good about kind of how it has come together and the product that we are now presenting to the community.
And I think, Abby, there is probably a at least, let me speak for myself, and maybe this will represent a number of listeners. I feel like I've got a lack of sophistication and understanding how we're going to scale solutions here. Because it's one thing to think about putting solar panels on your roof at home. It's another to think about a five-story building that you work in and figuring out exactly how it's powered and how you would change that. Because what I don't know is, how does the grid function? How quickly can we get a solution that isn't dirtier energy? And what's realistic? What's already within reach that we're not utilizing? It just feels bigger than I can get my head around personally, and I don't know, maybe that's part of the effort here is educating. But I hope, I would think I'm not alone in that kind of confusion there, Abby.
I don't think you are alone at all, Evan. But the thing is that, you know, it's actually more straightforward than people might think, right? And it is. It's a lack of education. A lot of people just plain don't know. They haven't had the opportunity to learn about this stuff. But it's not rocket science. Certainly identifying what fossil fuels you're currently using in your facility or, you know, your operations as a business or a nonprofit, that's relatively straightforward. The next step of, you know, how to make the transition. Also, you know, there are a lot of resources out there, people who are ready and willing to help. And because especially at the state level, there are a lot of great incentives that are being offered to support organizations that are looking to do this work. We just need to connect people to those resources. And again, that's what this campaign is looking to accomplish.
Well, let me turn to Mark Cohen here, who is chief of staff for the chamber. And at least at the outset here, it's more complicated than saying, the next time I'm in a liquor store, I'm going to have a choice of Finger Lakes wine, which I'd be a fool not to get, or California wine, which is just not as good. And I'm going to choose Finger Lakes because I'm not just a homer, it's better. That's one thing. You could walk out with a choice. It's not as simple as just saying, hey, you've got a choice between fossil fuel-powered energy or something else, and just check the box and it's immediately done. There are state incentives, as Abby just mentioned, which we can talk about. There are different mechanisms, but it's a little more complicated than just flipping a switch here. That being said, what's the chamber's role here? What are you guys hoping to do here?
Yeah, so first, Evan, I want to give you the credit you deserve to, you know, for shining a light on this and ensuring this is a conversation, as all of your talks are, so thank you for that.
It's mostly Abby's fault.
Well, and she was next on my list. I want to thank Dr. McHugh Griffa for pushing this and for encouraging the chamber to get involved. And, of course, Bob Duffy hopped right on board when Abby invited us, and then Todd from CauseWave and all the partners who've done an incredible job. Evan, you're right. It's not flipping a switch. It's not saying... just be environmentally sustainable, you know, sustainable business practices, just do it. It does cost money. It does take time. It does take resources. Something that Abby has conveyed very clearly and that the group agreed on is we're not going to go out and say, hey, this not only won't cost you anything, but you're going to make billions of dollars your first day doing this because it's the most, that's not the case. It will cost money. It will take resources
up front.
The idea, though, is that number one, corporate social responsibility is critically important, perhaps now more than ever. But number two, it's the right thing to do. And there will be tangible benefits for you in the future. Tangible, triple bottom line, focusing on sort of these terms that have come more, you know, into common parlance than they have before. And from the chamber's perspective, it is important to engage businesses, to engage our members, to engage the community in these conversations meaningfully and substantively so that they walk away with the information that they need before making a decision. It is not necessarily going to happen overnight, to your point, Evan, you're absolutely right. But if all we do is keep kicking the can down the road, saying, Well, you know, we'll get to it. I want to make a point that I've said to Abby 1,000 times, and she's sick of me saying it, or maybe she's not. But our region's power grid is already amongst the cleanest in the nation. That is huge. And so when folks think, well, does it matter if I recycle a can? Does it matter if I use a paper straw versus, does it matter? When you talk about using a heat pump in Monroe County, in our region, in our MSA, when you talk about purchasing an electric car, when you talk about plugging in versus filling up, it does, yes, the answer is yes, it does make a substantive, meaningful difference in our region because we're already so close. And so that point really struck a chord with me because you realize how much work we've already done and that with the business community and our nonprofits and the folks in power positions in our community, when they sort of take that personal responsibility, we can make some real meaningful, lasting progress.
Okay. Abby McHugh Griffa, do you share that assessment of where the region stands on this?
Well, it is true that our electricity, the electricity that's produced in our region is currently about 91% fossil fuel free. And that is much better than many other areas of the country. So that's absolutely true. Now, the question is, are we using that electricity, right? That's really the crux of the issue. First of all, you know, power purchasing agreements, you know, where you're actually, you know, what you're responsible for is what you're buying, which may or may not be the electricity that's produced in our region. But again, you know, we have the opportunity to switch our vehicles, switch our buildings to using this fossil fuel free electricity. But we're not currently doing that at scale. So I share Mark's enthusiasm. I do think we have a ways to go to really fully capitalize on the opportunity we have.
Well, let me ask Dave Benetti, who's the chief marketing officer for SWBR. What's your role here? What is SWBR's role? And what's going on with you guys?
Well, Evan, you know probably that we are... we're an architectural firm. We do architectural engineering. So the building you're sitting in here is very much related to the work we do. So my involvement in this group has to do with connecting the dots relative to the facilities that are built on the landscape. Not only looking backwards at a building like this, but looking forwards and helping to inform the decision makers so that they are making better decisions going forward. Your point is that this is a colossal issue, but it's incrementally solved. It's not solved overnight. I'm not going to make my wine decision for the rest of my life and in one fell swoop.
Yep.
We're going to do this incrementally. It's about 60% of the building stock in the United States are historically older buildings. They're not going to be transformed overnight. A lot of buildings are going to be newer buildings. That's where we're coming in right now. We have to make good decisions now about what we're going to do with those buildings and how we're going to power them up. And we're just talking about the building side, not the automobile or vehicle side. So we're intimately involved in those decision makings. And my guess is when this building was designed and built, to a great extent, it was kind of a, of course we're going to do it that way. There wasn't a lot of thoughtfulness about
it. I'm sure.
See what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Now today, with the issues of climate change, with the issues of stewardship responsibility on earth resources, there's a heightened awareness. That's why this discussion now is a contemporary and absolutely critical discussion going forward.
So, but here's where I think, when you talk about 60% of the building stock is older buildings, you say?
Right.
How much of that stock is retrofittable? How much can adapt to where you want to go with this?
Well, the reality is it's all retrofittable.
Okay.
Any building that exists right now, depending upon who the owner is, if their DNA is wired such that they want to go through this, number one. Secondly, that they can see the long-term gains, because if they go to an all-electric infrastructure, there's going to be savings over time. There will be an initial investment. There's no getting around it. If I put a heat pump system in at my home, it's going to be initially more expensive, but long-term, it's going to be lower maintenance,
yeah,
lower cost.
Absolutely.
So it's the same thing with a building owner, exactly the same. They've got to want to step up to it. Now, businesses are businesses, and the bottom line's the bottom line. So it's a tough ask in a lot of situations to get that person over that threshold to make that decision.
Oh,
but they're all retrofittable. Every one of them are.
I mean, different companies are liquid in different ways or not liquid in different ways. And
correct.
Have more of an opportunity to make that investment up front than others here. And so I take that point. And listeners, I would love to hear from people. Wherever you work or wherever you spend most of your time, do you know how it's powered? Have you made any changes? What would it take for that to happen? 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free. 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. Email the program, connections@WXXI.org. And I know Mark wants to jump back in here in just a second, but Dave, let me just close the loop on one important point here. So when you talk about if a company really wants this, if this is in their DNA, they can do this. Doesn't matter how old the building is. Again, my brain is still kind of going back to, you're not just going to put solar panels on the roof. I mean, there are probably a lot of heat pumps. I don't know exactly the mechanism always. What typically would SWBR be working to do based on, a five-story building that wants to change?
So the vast majority of the housing we're doing for affordable housing,
yeah,
that we're doing now is all electric. There are no fossil fuels at all. Not only that, we're working with NYSERDA and other agencies in New York State to create an environment that's ultra efficient. So the insulation is greater and the building's going to perform better. But yes, you're absolutely right. Take an older building, you're going to take the fossil fuel producing elements out of there. The boilers are going to go away. And you're going to use heat pumps, and you're going to either, you can use ground source, you can get it, you can create the energy that you need in there to heat or to cool through rejection or by adding in the necessary heat that you need into the loop. Basically, the loops inside of a building are either taking heat out and getting rid of it, or they're adding heat in to cool or to heat. It's a very simple process, and the systems today, compared to 30 or 40 or 50 or 60 years ago when a lot of these buildings were built, are incredibly sophisticated and very simple to run. That's the benefit. So we've made a huge amount of progress. And New York State, of course, is committed to going, by 2030 and 2040 to really seriously up,
yeah,
the game on renewables and reduce the game on fossil.
We're in a five-story building. What's the cost? We want to do this building. What's it going to cost us?
To do a retrofit?
Heat pumps, the works here.
That's a because you got all the same lighting, you got all your same electrical systems in the building, all the stuff in this room and other places. You're really only talking about the air conditioning and the heating. On a per square foot basis, it may be a $20 a square foot or less investment up front. You're going to take stuff out and you're going to replace it. And once that's done,
$20 a square foot. I was promised there'd be no math.
Don't do any math.
How many square feet are in this building? Five stories. I have no idea. You could probably look
at
a building and tell.
30,000.
See, you know, I would have said like 50 or 100. I don't know.
I don't know.
You could have told me 5. No, you couldn't have told me 5. 30,000.
Let's just say 30,000.
Okay. So we're talking though, I mean, a substantial chunk change here.
Initial investment.
Yes.
Life cycle cost is going to pay for itself over time.
Okay. I got you. So it could be a $500,000 investment, roughly.
Could be.
Okay. Is there, Mark, is there help to pay for that? Are there state incentives? You and Abby want to hit that?
So great question. I want to hit 2 points based on what Dave was saying about bottom line, because that is important. And the Greater Rochester Chamber, our 1,300 members, our board of directors, care very deeply about their bottom line. And by the way, they should, because economic development, growth, expansion does not happen without making money. Period. Hard stop. That said, this concept of a triple bottom line, you know, profits, people, planet, you've got, you know, it basically posits that the social impact, the environmental impact, as well as the financial impact, all matter. Those are all important aspects. And I think, particularly with my generation, I'm 26 years old, I can tell you that my colleagues who I graduated with from school, grad school, they care about where they're working. They don't just care about, you know, making $60,000 a year. They don't want to sell their souls and make $60,000. They want to work somewhere that they believe in. And so, and by the way, that is not to say that's just my generation. I think everybody on this call agrees.
No, but I think there is, I mean, every generation adopts different sort of an evolution of values and emphasis. And I think that's happening.
You're absolutely right, Evan.
It's definitely happening now. I agree with you.
For sure. And I think, by the way, that sort of passion around it is impacting other generations, which is great. That was point number one. Point number two, yes, there is funding available. Look at Monroe County, what County Executive Bello and Legislator Michael Udelson did with CPACE. CPACE is a program that allows business owners, developers, property owners. Abby, correct me if I'm wrong. Tell me if I'm making any of this up. But it allows them to use, it's not taxpayer dollars. Nobody can complain that they're paying more because Evan Dawson cares about environmental sustainability. This is private money that's available for business developers to essentially invest in improving their buildings, improving their properties. And it's going to make a huge difference. 50 other municipalities in New York State are doing it, including the city of Rochester. Now Monroe County is on board. But Buffalo, I mean, we are seeing meaningful substantive impact from this. And it's only good things that come when we see these sorts of loans and low interest or no interest loans that are available for these business owners and developers who want to do the right thing. So the answer to your question is yes, there is. And there are a litany through the DEC and, you know, ESD and other there are a litany of programs available at the state level. But to give the county credit where credit's due, that was a really big get for Monroe County.
Okay, I got to get Mike Wallen in just a second, but let me just ask Abby if you want to add anything to what Mark just said there.
Yeah, I think Mark is definitely on the right track. I want to loop back on the question about like how much a specific building, how much it will cost, though.
Yeah.
The answer is like 100%, it depends. And that it depends question, you don't have to figure out the answer by yourself. So that's a main aspect of this program, is to help people get hooked up with an energy audit and energy study. And again, those are highly subsidized. So businesses, nonprofits can get those audits done for very low prices, so that they have good information, so they can make good decisions, so they can be planning for the long term. And, you know, a critical piece of this is, you know, you don't replace your heating system every day, but you need to be thinking ahead and knowing what your options are. And when the time comes, if you don't know what a heat pump is, you can't choose a heat pump. So this is where, you know, the education aspect of the campaign comes in. Again, letting people know what their options are, helping them connect to the right resources so they can run the numbers, figure out how they can make the finances work. And yes, there are a lot of really good both incentives and financing options that are out there.
Mike Waller is the Director of Sustainability for Rochester Regional Health. Tell us what your role here is and how you see this conversation, Mike.
Yeah, thank you. We say all the time that all environmental issues eventually become healthcare issues. And so, treating those issues is really just core to our operations. And, I think how we fit into this, or at least I like to think, is that we are an example of a local business that truly cares about this and is actually making a difference. And so we have lots of heat pumps installed throughout our facilities, both geothermal and air source heat pumps. We are seeking to transition our fleet to electric vehicles. We have lots of EV charging stations installed throughout our health system. And, it's not entirely the focus of this campaign, but, we have a 100% renewable electricity target by 2025. And so we have 7 solar farms installed throughout the state that, folks have talked about some of these financing options, but all of those were zero out of pocket, and we start saving money the first month that they're turned on. So, I like to think that we are an example organization that has been able to see a lot of success with these efforts, and we truly do realize that triple bottom line benefit. I personally have staff talk to me regularly about how much they appreciate all of these efforts, and that they're proud to work at a place that actually cares about the environment and it's doing something to improve it. And that's for some folks, that's one of the main reasons that they are proud to work at our organization.
Mm. Yeah, Mike, can I just ask on that point? I mean, I do you agree? Well, I mean, I think Mark was trying to be diplomatic and say, everybody cares about this. And I think that is true. But do you see any sort of a sliding scale of emphasis based on the age of your employees who are more vocal about these issues?
I'd say in general, yes, it tends to be the younger folks, but there are some very passionate, people that are in the older generations. When I first started, one of our cardiologists and I, we went down to the climate march back in, 2016 or 2017, and he invited me to go, he's been there for many decades, so. There are a lot of folks, but I'd say they definitely skew younger.
Any downside that you've seen so far, whether it was when you're installing everything from heat pumps to other forms of non-fossil fuel energy, any disruption, any downsides that you would report, Mike?
No, I mean, we've really only experienced positive things. Like it's been discussed, we see a lot of savings from all of these efforts. And when you add up, all of the renewable energy and the energy efficiency efforts that we've done since I started there back in 2016, we're saving close to $2.5 million per year just from all of the upgrades that we've done. And most of those have had less than a 2-year payback. So, most of these efforts are financially viable. Some of the technologies can have a longer payback. But it's at the end of the day, we find that it's still worth it.
I want to talk to all of our guests about maybe the other half of this, if you want to look at it that way, which is transportation. Mike just mentioned EV charging and other mm-hmm. transportation options. I'm curious to know about what businesses are doing. I don't know if just how big government's role is in either facilitating ways for there to be more charging stations at businesses, but also at public places, everything from the New York State Thruway and rest stop. I mean, I think we're seeing more, and I'm sure architecturally, if you're starting from scratch, maybe that's becoming more of a norm to install, though we can talk about that in a second. But Abby McHugh Griffa, how much of the question of transportation is it a half and half in your mind? What you want to see businesses and happening here, what things happening with the AMPT campaign, the AMPT initiative. How do you view that?
Can you clarify for me, Evan, your question
yeah.
when you say half and half?
Well, I'm thinking about buildings, right? I'm thinking about literally, I'm the building I'm sitting in, How is it powered? Asking people to think about that, especially asking company leaders to think about that and community leaders who have the power to make those changes. But then I'm thinking about how employees get to work and what options there are for them to get to work that's not driven by fossil fuel, what options there are for them to charge up when they get to work. There have been efforts that the Chamber and others have been involved with in the past, I'm sure Mark will talk about. But I know that the AMP campaign cares very much about this question of transportation. It's not just how buildings are powered. So, I mean, to the extent that the AMP campaign is a block of stuff that is trying to change in society, do you view it as, hey, we're focused on buildings, but we're also focused on transportation? I mean, how do you view that?
Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah.
So the answer is that we've identified buildings and transportation as our two main areas of focus for this campaign, because that's where the majority of our greenhouse gas emissions are coming from locally. And we can't like do one or the other. It must be both. You know, to get to a net zero economy by 2050, as New York State's Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act requires, we have to do both, and we have to do both in a very dramatic way. Now, for any individual organization, one may be more relevant than others. You know, some businesses, of course, rent their space. They may have less control over where, you know, where their heat is coming from, what the system is, or they may have no vehicles, and that may be irrelevant. And one thing that really inspires me about the Rochester Regional Health kind of story is how they've prioritized charging stations to make it possible for their employees to really make this transition. So it's not just about the business, but it's how do you, you know, kind of create that ripple effect. You know, we're looking to guide organizations to find what makes the most sense for them and, you know, and to plan that out, to think about, you know, timeline, what can they do now, what will have to wait down for a couple of years down the line. But in terms of building and transportation, both equally strong focus in this campaign, and we have to be doing it both.
Okay. Mike Waller, how many people are taking advantage of, how much demand is there for charging stations, for example?
You know, when we first installed them, we sent a survey out and to the entire health system to see how many people had electric vehicles, and we had a pretty good response rate. You know, we have, at that time, I think we had around 18,000 employees, and I think the total number was, you know, 500 people had an electric vehicle, and they either had one or they were planning on getting one soon.
That, out of 18,000?
Yeah, so that was a lot. That was more than I expected. And so we knew all the locations to install them, and we installed stations at all of those locations, plus a few others. And that was back in 2018. And so it's only been a couple of years, and most of those places, you know, we've run out of stations. They're always full. And so we're currently in the process of planning to install quite a few more. About half is we installed 90. We're planning to install another 40 or 50. And I've heard several stories of employees saying that they went and got an electric vehicle as a result of seeing those stations installed, and they would park there, see it every day, and feel guilty about driving their giant gas guzzling SUV, and then. When the time was right, they went out and got an electric vehicle. So that's happened pretty often, that's led to us, you know, led to us needing to install quite a few more stations.
You know, this is how bad I am at math. So Mike says that 18,000 employees, about 500 or so, expressed interest in a charging station. Immediately, I'm like, 500? I mean, that's like 30% of your workforce. It's three. I'm not good at math. But guess what? That's still a lot of people. So for big organizations, you don't need to have 30% of your workforce that wants electric right now to have enough of a demand that you ought to be trying to offer that, because eventually it'll be 30%. But even if it's three, you know, that's still a lot of people. And, you know, so what is the role of SWBR here, Dave Bonetti? I mean, how much are you thinking about making sure this is part of the plans wherever you're working?
Well, we're working on making it a part of the plan wherever we are. But there's, to clarify, I want to go back to Abby's comment on it depends. And so I totally agree with what she said. That word is critical here for the charging stations as well. There's a general misconception that every time I get in my electric car, which I own as well, and I drove today in my electric car, I'm going to drive home on my electric car, I don't need to charge. You don't need to charge all the time. You don't need to fill your car with gas all the time. And so this idea of having thousands and thousands of charging stations is a misconception.
Oh, that's a great point. I've never thought about it that way.
We do not.
Why have I never thought of it that way?
You can drive your electric car, depending upon which one you have, for hundreds of miles without needing charge. And then, by the way, I charge up at home on a 110, and it's charged up the next morning.
So your point is, even if 50 people drive electric cars, you don't need 50 charging stations at work.
Well, unless they're driving from 8 hours away.
I live in Shalott. I'm like 7 miles away. Why do I need one? What is wrong with me? Why have I never thought about
exactly.
this? Exactly. That's such
you
a good point.
You need an electric car because it's a perfect situation for you. And to recharge when you need to, it's a couple bucks, all right? So this is an easy situation from that standpoint. So the depends piece has to do with it depends a lot on the workforce, where they are, how remote they are. But we are encouraging always to have, in all our projects, a couple of stations because there's always what one might call an emergency.
Yep.
You need to charge up, and that's a good thing to offer somebody.
Yeah, go ahead, Mark Cohen from the Chamber. I know you want to jump in on this, and I know that this is something that has been on the radar more than just since yesterday. So,
no, it has been.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that we focused heavily on has been hydrogen fuel cells. And I understand that that topic can be controversial in the space of sustainability. Everything I say depends is sort of premised on the fact that how that energy comes to be matters, right? You can't burn a ton of fossil fuels to get the energy you need because you're somewhat defeating the purpose. So with that disclaimer, Congressman Morelli has been a massively huge proponent of hydrogen fuel cells since his time as majority leader in the assembly. And he's been a wonderful partner. I was going to say a wonderful partner to the chamber. The chamber has been a partner to him and to many others in the community who care about this topic and who recognize the opportunities involved with hydrogen fuel cells. That aside, we're talking about cars, which is an important conversation, and it's a main sort of focus of this committee. But the other thing to focus on, not everybody's going to get an electric vehicle. Because they're not. Not everybody wants to purchase a vehicle, period. They want to use public transportation. RTS, to my knowledge, has the second largest fleet of electric buses in the state. I think they have 10 right now. There's going to be 10 more by next year, by 2022. Also, because of Congressman Morelli, they secured an $800,000 grant for a recharging station. We have all of these sorts of things in the works in our region. We're leading the way in all of these different facets of the community regarding environmental sustainability. There is a way for everybody to participate. If businesses want to help, transportation is a huge issue when it comes to workforce development, a conversation for another time. But when businesses can say, hey, we're going to give you a bus pass, you know, for RTS, and by the way, you're also helping the environment, goes to the point with, you know, Rochester Regional, people care about where they're working. They want to know, oh, you know what, my boss, my leadership cares about sustainability.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, you know, so I think just focusing on not just the vehicles themselves, but electric buses and other avenues to promote environmental sustainability.
Yeah, and that's where the fleet issue comes in that
yep.
Abby was talking about.
Correct.
Fleet change, when we're doing incremental changes and making a change like RTS has made, which Mark's talking about, is a huge, huge change for the community.
I'm so glad we're having this conversation. I am never again, thanks to Dave Bonetti at SWBR, going to think about the need for a 1-to-1 ratio of an employee with an electric guitar versus a charging station
that's right.
at work. And I, for some reason, that's always been in my head. Like, boy, you got 50 employees who drive electric. You're going to need 50 charge. No, you don't. You don't. Probably only need a few.
That's right.
That's really a great point. You know, it shouldn't be that great a point, Dave. It's just the host is a little dim. We have to take our only break of the hour. When we come back from this break, I've got some questions. Listeners have a few questions on charging stations, so we can hit those. And I'm going to add, on the other side of this break, I'll ask Abby McHugh Griffa to remind listeners, if you want to learn more about this AMPT campaign, you know, where you need to go online to get information. And we're going to talk about who's really responsible. I mean, is this an individual employee, or really is this a top-down solution? Are you getting more people involved? Are you seeing more CEOs and company leaders and business leaders and community leaders say, yes, this is what we want to do. We want buildings in this community using energy that is not from fossil fuels. We want transportation options that are not from fossil fuels, and we are willing to do it now. Dave Benetti, Chief Marketing Officer for SWBR, and Mark Cohen from the Greater Rochester Chamber of Commerce are with us in studio. Abby McHugh Griffa from the Climate Solutions Accelerator is with us on the line, along with Mike Waller from Rochester Regional Health, and we're right back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on the next Connections, we're joined by the leaders of the Police Accountability Board in Rochester, Connor Dwyer Reynolds and Shawnee Wilson, talking about a recent controversy that ended up with the PAB with more autonomy to make their own decisions on who they hire and what they do next. We're going to get an update on the Police Accountability Board Monday.
This is Veronica Volk from WXXI News, and we've got a new weekly podcast for you. It's called Earshot, and it's got all the most important, best told, sometimes off the beaten path news stories from your favorite WXXI and city reporters. Earshot comes out every Friday. Don't miss it. Subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.
This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Charging stations big on the line, on the minds of listeners. I'll get to your questions in just a second. Abby McHugh Griffa is the Executive Director for the Climate Solutions Accelerator of the Genesee Finger Lakes region. Where do you want people to sort of navigate online when we think about all the things that our guests are talking about today and how they can either be involved or maybe their companies, their workplace? So where do you want them to go?
We would invite them to visit the ampedproject.org website. And there they can, there's lots of information, lots of resources right there. And they can also sign up to receive, you know, we'll be putting out case studies. We'll be putting out all kinds of kind of helpful tips and information. And also we have a webinar coming up. Our first in our AMPED Project Series webinar is on September 30th at noon. So people can sign up at the website for that first introductory webinar.
And it's ampedproject.org?
That's it.
Okay. Who's really most responsible for a community really buying into this, at least at this level, Abby? I mean, does it really start at the top down with company leaders, business leaders, or is it do you view it a different way?
You know, I think it can start in all sorts of different places. It certainly helps when the leadership at the top of an organization is fully on board and committed to this. But I think, you know, it can begin anywhere, at least starting the conversation, asking the questions about where an organization's energy needs or, you know, how they're currently being met. But yeah, having the leadership on board is a primary focus of this. And so that is the target audience of this campaign, the who we're trying to reach with this message.
Okay. Let me get some feedback now from listeners. Ruth and Irondequoit, who pays for the charging stations in High Falls, for example, and do taxes go up? I don't know. I mean, certainly it's going to be different if we're talking about a New York State Thruway charging station versus a private business's charging station. So I don't know if there's an easy answer for this. But Abby, what would you say to Ruth?
I don't know that there's a straightforward answer either. I would actually point this question to Mike, who I think would, you know, has kind of the most experience with this. But I do know, you know, when you install a charging station, you can make the choice of, are you going to cover the electricity costs yourself, or are users going to pay a fee for that electricity? And different organizations make different choices on that.
So. Mike, you want to add to that?
Yeah. So for all the charging stations, the highest cost is the upfront cost. The ongoing cost, even the electricity, is actually pretty small. But there are incentives through the state that cover the overwhelming majority of that upfront cost. And all of the pool of money that those incentives come out of is generated from an additional charge on all of our gas and electric bills. So it's something, it's a fund that everybody pays into on a monthly basis. And then every, you know, so often they figure out how to dish out the money that's in that fund. And so currently they're providing funds to cover the installation of these EV charging stations.
Michael in Penfield wants to know, how much does a charging station cost? I don't know if he means an individual charging station or the kind of public charging stations we might see with multiple bays. Mike Waller, do you recall anything you want to say there for Michael?
Yeah, you know, like Dave was saying earlier, I have an electric car too, and I literally just plug it into the 120-volt outlet that's in my garage, And so for your home, it costs nothing. If you want something that can charge your car a little bit faster, you can pay to get an upgrade. But the kind of charging stations you might install at a business, I think, you know, before the incentives, the stations themselves are, you know, around like $4,000 or so. And then when you add up all the other stuff, you know, you have to pay the contractor to install them and run cables and all those things. I think you probably get to per station, I want to say it's around $5,000 or per port, because there are dual port stations and single port stations. And so the incentives as they exist today are about $4,000 per port. So they cover the majority of it. And if you're smart enough about citing it, you can pretty much cover the entire cost.
Let me ask Dave and Mark to weigh in on that. Mark, you want to jump in?
Yeah, no, to Mike's point, so I did a little bit of homework before coming, Evan, because I knew that your listeners are intelligent and would ask questions like this. So through Charge Ready New York, NYSERDA provides rebates of $4,000 per charging port. There's an income tax credit of $5,000, and that's meant for commercial and workplace locations like Mike was talking about. Climate Smart, the CSC, the Climate Smart Communities, offers a 50-50 matching grant for municipalities who are engaging not just, by the way, in charging ports, but in other sort of retrofitting environmental sustainability efforts. So I'm not promising every one of your listeners that they're going to be eligible for each of these grants, but the point is, you know, to Mike and Abby's earlier points, there is funding available. New York State is working very, very actively through NYSERDA, through Charge Ready New York, through these income tax credits to encourage people to do it and to convey that this isn't going to cost you $50 million. It's actually quite affordable, you know, at the onset.
Okay. Dave, anything to add there in terms of cost and planning for those kind of ports?
It's I agree with Mark entirely. And Mike, the incentives are there to offset a lot of it. It's a really small incremental cost when you're doing a construction project of any significance. It's really a very small investment. And from the standpoint of the mindset of the corporation, the ownership, who they care for their employees, and they're incentivizing them to drive smart and to go this way, it makes all the sense in the world. In 10 years, by 2030, 50% of the new vehicles sold in the United States and around the world are going to be all electric. And within 20 years, you're not going to be able to find a fossil fuel car that's sold new. It's going that way. So we just need to realize, as you did, it's easy. Yeah. I don't need to have charging stations all over the place. And the vehicles are, frankly, fantastic. So,
yeah, one of the really interesting questions is, what will be the year in which buying a new car that is fossil fuel powered in any sense is a risky or unwise investment given the future of gas stations and available fuel? I mean, I don't know. We're getting closer.
Yeah, it's a hard one to answer.
It's a really good question. And Governor Hochul just signed a bill mirroring California's law that will outlaw the sale of gas combustible engines, I think that's the term, by 2035. Yeah. So in 2035, you'll no longer be able to purchase that. And Evan, that's a really good question. That sort of risk assessment is going to have to be done by the consumers.
All right. Jack says, I bought my house in 2017. We put in geothermal. With New York State tax rebates, we were able to afford it with no money down. Best decision ever. I mean,
you know, case in point.
Yeah, that's for a home, not necessarily the scale of a business, but I mean, that's kind of what you're talking about, Dave. I mean, there are incentives, and there's, you know, there's always going to be math up front, but there's probably a lot better return on your investment than you might think. Tom says, per NYSERDA, New York State's reliance on imported electricity, and he says risky imported electricity, doubled from 2004 to 2018. Natural gas produced 33% of New York State electricity in 2018, up from just 18.8% in 2004, and goes higher with Indian Point closing. How clean is electric? Tom wants to know. Abby McHugh Griffa, how clean is electric?
Yeah, this is a really good question. And here's this is where, like, I'm starting to be a broken record here, because in this case, it depends what source you reference. So how the regions are broken down, and again, whether you're looking at what we are purchasing or what we are producing, you're going to get different numbers on that.
Here's what is certain. We continue to be too reliant on fossil fuels. Yes, our region is not burning coal. That's great. But we are burning natural gas for electricity and, of course, also in our buildings. And that is unsustainable on many, many levels. So, you know, in addition to the climate risk, you know, as people have been you know, saying here today, this transition is happening. This transition to clean energy is well underway. And any investments that people are making, people, businesses, governments are making right now in fossil fuels and fossil fuel infrastructure is a bad investment. And I heard, you know, recently someone say that, you know, for businesses specifically, if you don't have a climate plan, you don't have a business plan.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is the direction that things are going. And so anyone who's not at least beginning to kind of make the plan for how are they going to be part of this transition, how are they going to get in sooner rather than later, actually, because the incentives are great now, the incentives might not always be great.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to be getting off of fossil fuels. And we do also, I'll add, need just better data and clearer data and more publicly accessible data about what are our emissions and where they're coming from. Because it can be actually very hard to really, really get clarity around some of that stuff.
Bill emails to say, Evan, my wife drives to SUNY Geneseo from Rochester twice a week, 30 miles, in our PHEV with roughly 42 miles of range. Even level one charging could make it a totally electric commute, but there are zero charging stations on campus right now. The person she frequently carpools with also drives a PHEV. Level one to two charging on light poles in parking areas seems like a potential high return on investment, low-hanging fruit solution to make PHEVs more viable. That's from Bill. So it's an example, you know, of, I mean, if you're just looking at return on investment, Dave Minetti, that seems like a winner. I think he's right.
Yeah, and all our educational institutions need to step up, and they all need to be incentivizing those who are driving too, especially those who are working there. This is a great example, a perfect low-hanging fruit, absolutely.
So, Abby McHugh Griffin, when we think about organizations, we've been talking about the Chamber and companies like SWBR, not only thinking about their own footprint, but helping others. We've been talking about Rochester Regional Health. These are all the partners that you have. I want to ask you, who most disappoints you in this community?
Oh, I'm so not going to answer that question, Evan. There's no chance. But I appreciate the question. Here's what I want to express appreciation for all the many organizations that have been part of making this campaign come together, including the City of Rochester, including Common Ground Health, including some developers. You know, there are a lot of partners at the table, including, of course, all these guys who are here with me today. And we can't do it, you know, on our own. We need this kind of collaboration. We need powerful, prominent institutions in our region stepping up as champions of this stuff. And I'm seeing that happen, and it really gives me hope.
So let me ask the question a different way then. When I look at your list of partners who are doing this work, when you think of the people and the organizations who are wonderful people with great intentions who will be on the list in the future but aren't on the list yet, what about them? No? That didn't get you either?
You're still trying to get me to name names? No.
No. Okay. All right. So I am going to try this one more different way, but I'm not going to ask you to name names. But how long is the list in your mind of people who could potentially be there? How great of a growth opportunity is this to build this partnership with AMPT? And how far do you have to go to get to where you want to go? To get more buy-in.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we need to achieve net zero emissions economy-wide by 2050, as, you know, as New York State law requires, and even more urgently, really, as the climate crisis requires. So we need everybody. I mean, no one can be left behind in mm-hmm. this transition. One place where, you know, I feel a lot of sense of urgency is organizations that might not have a lot of resources to be putting into, you know, some of the upfront investment, upfront cost. I want to see this be an equitable transition. And I know that a lot of municipal governments are really struggling with budgetary issues that make it hard, and businesses too, of course, that make it hard to make the right choices. So we need to, you know, be supporting those organizations in a variety of ways, including very targeted outreach and education and support. And it just, it has to be everyone, you know? Mm-hmm. So I want to see every organization, and I want to make sure that as we roll this out, that it is something that even organizations that are struggling, municipal governments that maybe don't have, you know, an internal person dedicated to this. So, you know, for example, it's fantastic that Rochester Regional Health has Mike, whose job it is to figure this out, but not all organizations have that. So how, you know, I think the AMP campaign can provide some of that support, some of that guidance for smaller organizations, but we need more.
Well, as we close the hour, I'm thinking about something Dave Benetti said when he mentioned the fact that in the future, you're just not going to be able to get a car. You're not going to be able to buy a car that is a gasoline-powered car eventually. That seems very strange right now.
It does.
But people will get used to that. The question is, how rocky is it between now and then? I think people will get used to it in the same way they got used to no smoking in bars, the same way that they got used to not having plastic bags in the grocery store. All the things that seem like disruption are things that people adapt to. And that's the future. The question is, can we build that bridge? And that's the goal with a campaign like AMPT, to make it more viable and to get us there and to get a lot of buy-in. And we'll see how this goes. Abby McHugh Griffith, thanks for making time. And thanks for educating the community on this.
Thanks for having us, Evan.
Mike Waller from Rochester Regional Health. Enjoy driving that EV, man. I appreciate the time.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Dave Benetti from SWBR. Fascinating stuff. Thank you, Dave.
You're welcome, Nevin.
And Mark Cohen, Chief of Staff at the Greater Rochester Chamber of Commerce. Thanks for walking over to see us today.
Evan, thank you again for shedding light on this.
Thanks, man. From the whole team here, Megan Mack producing and engineering, Julie Williams, Evan Dawson saying thanks for listening. We'll talk to you Monday.